everybody. I'm Sarah.
It's Alicia.
Did you say it's Alicia?
Yeah. Oh, I'm Alicia.
This is
Sinister State. I'm struggling today.
You're
Hi, guys.
We're hungry.
What? Yeah, I guess.
I mean, it is 1:23.
Right. Okay.
Well, we're making good time.
We're making good time, guys. We're back in Georgia today.
This is our sixth episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Sixth episode.
Six. And we got four more to go, baby. And then we'll be done for the day.
Yes, but we do need a lunch break at some point. Right. But
we're going to lunch after this one.
I won't speak over your Georgia.
Huh?
I won't speak over your Georgia or anything.
What do you mean speak over?
You went to go say something and I said something over you. I was like, let me not speak over what you're trying to say.
Oh.
Because you said, we're in Georgia. And I started saying something else.
It's all good. Listen, you go ahead and say what you got to say, pal.
I have these good candies right now that I'm not munching on. They're called Sour Punch Bites. And they're huge. They're like that big. And I bought these at Publix yesterday. And they're the red version. So there's strawberry, watermelon, cherry, and raspberry. And if I didn't just seal this bag, I would down the entire thing in 30 seconds because they are so good. And sour candy is my kryptonite. But that's just what I wanted to tell y'all. So if you like sour candy, go to your local store and get some Sour Punch Bites because they're delicious.
Sour Punch Bites, if you're listening.
They also sponsors. Have like multicolored, which is like apple, blue raspberry, and watermelon, I think. Strawberry. I think it's strawberry.
Well, that one says strawberry and cherry, so it's potentially it could be any of those red ones there.
Yeah, it's not raspberry, and I don't think it's watermelon, but the other one is blue, red, and green, so there's that. But I just wanted to give you a disclaimer. It's a good candy. Sour Punch, sponsor me, because I want free candy.
That is so funny. You're like, I want free candy.
I do. I need to not eat candy, but that or my ghost energy.
I love ghost energy. Listen, if you're listening out there, ghost, please just sponsor us.
This one's the sour pink lemonade, and I think it's the best flavor.
Because I love, have you seen their shaker bottles?
Mm-mm.
They even have shaker bottles.
I didn't
even know they had pre-workout. I'm like, oh my gosh, they got pre-workout, and I need that in my life.
They make pre-workout, and then they also make protein powders that taste like cookies. Like, they have Chips Ahoy and Oreo.
That's it. I've got to go to the store now.
Yes.
Where's the local GNC?
I don't know. Probably
it's in the mall. It is in the mall. I know it's there because I went there.
That's why I like Ghost. I've never had their protein powder or their pre-workout. I've only had their energy drinks, but they're on point.
I want to try their stuff now.
Mm-hmm. They're on point.
So, Ghost, if you are listening to us, sponsor.
Yeah, like, think about it.
Or at least send us free stuff.
Yeah, I'll wear your merch or drink it or eat it.
We'll discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all about the free. What was it you said?
$3.99. $3.99. My favorite number.
Okay. So we're going to get into our missing person for Georgia. It is Tavish Sutton.
Tavish. I don't know.
Tavish.
I really like the name Sutton.
Yeah.
Like, not as just a last name, but a first name. I think it's cool. Sutton.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, they are missing from Atlanta, Georgia.
The ATL.
Whoop, whoop. So, it's listed as a non-family abduction. He was 1 month old at the time of his disappearance.
Just a babe.
Yep. So, his date of birth was February 10th, 1993. He is a African-American male. At the time, he was 8 pounds. So, the clothing and their clothing description, because there's no jewelry, was a white flower print t-shirt, a diaper, and Grady Memorial Hospital tags around his wrist and ankle.
He was only a month old.
Right. So, medical conditions. Tavish was recuperating from minor surgery to treat an abscess at the time of his March 1993 abduction. He required continual medical care to treat this condition as well. So he is an African American male with black hair, brown eyes, and he has a 1/4-inch surgical incision on his left buttock at the time of his disappearance. So I'm assuming some type of diaper rash type.
Mm.
You know, sometimes babies get the little bowls and mm-hmm. stuff, abscesses on their bottom because, you know, it happened.
Yeah.
So, anyways, so the details of his disappearance, He was admitted as a patient in the Hughes Spalding Pediatric Unit of Grady Memorial Hospital on Butler Street in Atlanta, Georgia, on March 6, 1993. He was in the custody of Department of Family and Children's Services at that time.
DCFS. DCSF.
Well, they call it DCS, but yes, Department of Children's Services, but they're, yes, basically DSS type custody. He underwent minor surgery over the weekend and was recuperating in a semi-private room in the ward during the early morning hours of March 9th. His roommate was another infant, and that baby's mother and sister were spending the night in the room also. A nurse checked in on them at 6:45. At that time, Tavisha's roommate's mother and sister were asleep on the couch in the room. When the nurse checked the room again 15 minutes later, Tavisha was gone. Tavisha's roommate's family was thoroughly investigated by the police. Their home was searched, and all the family members were interviewed. They were eventually cleared a suspect in the case. His birth mother was being treated for schizophrenia in a mental institution at the time of his abduction. Neither she or other relatives were considered suspect in his abduction. There were two persons of interest in his disappearance. One was an agitated man who tried to enter the hospital's pediatric wing after 8:30 p.m. the night that he was last seen. Visitors to the children's wing after 8:30 were required to carry a pass that identified them and gave them authorization to be there. This man didn't have a pass and had no legitimate reason to be there. That man was described as tall and thin and was wearing a baseball cap. He disappeared before security could be called. And the second person of interest was a woman aged about 25 years old, described as 5'5", 160 pounds, with a medium brown complexion, strong cheekbones, and almond-shaped eyes. Says she wore black pants and a long black coat and large earrings, and her hair was pulled back in a large bow. She was carrying an infant with curly hair. A man saw the woman just outside the hospital and noticed her because she was very attractive. Another witness saw the same woman inside the hospital. Sketches of two women wanted for questioning and his disappearances are posted with the case summary. The DCS has terminated his mother's parental rights to his three siblings and was seeking to terminate her rights as well at the time when he disappeared. They had taken custody of the baby when he was a few weeks old and placed him with a foster family. His mother sued the hospital over her son's kidnapping in March of 1995. The suit was settled out of court for $600,000. Authorities stated the woman who was pretending to be pregnant may have abducted Tavish in an attempt to raise the child. Speculate she lived between 4 and 24 miles from the hospital, but no evidence supporting any theory has been recovered, and his case still remains open at the time. So,
he might be alive.
He probably is alive. Somebody took that baby home.
Yeah.
That's the reason why I brought that case out, because that's, you know, I'm sure it would crush somebody's world to probably find that out, but it does happen. You know, there was that girl from South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she had been kidnapped. And, you know, her family, I want to say it was like, was it New York? Something like, I don't know.
Oh, I'm not sure. I've heard the story of a boy. Yeah. He was kidnapped from like Texas and his father kidnapped him and changed their names and raised him in Michigan, I think it was. No. And it wasn't until, or Indiana or something, and it wasn't until he was applying to college and he kept getting an error when he was putting in a social security number.
Yeah.
And it kept coming back. That was pretty recent, wasn't it? Like 10 years ago, I think.
Well, there was another boy that I think it just recently happened with. Same thing. He was trying to apply to college and his stuff wasn't working. What was that girl's name?
I'm not sure. There's a boy, a man at this point. He was placed on the missing and endangered children's list by his mother because his father had joint custody of him and his father took him overseas to, gosh, the Mariana Islands or something. And he never lied. And like, there was nothing in their custody agreement that said that his father couldn't take him out of the country or anything on vacation.
Yeah.
Well, his mother didn't like it. I think he took him over the summer and his mother didn't like it. And she reported him missing and she reported that his father had kidnapped him. And to this day, the father is not allowed in the United States or he'll be arrested on the spot. But he's like, I didn't kidnap my kid. Like, he's not missing.
Yeah.
Like, you just didn't like the fact that I took him on a vacation overseas, but he's not missing and I'm not a criminal. And his son is in his 20s now, and this happened when the kid was like 7 or 8.
Wow.
And the kid's even like gone on TikTok and been like, I'm not missing.
That's crazy.
And but he can't remove himself from the registry,
That's crazy.
even as a full-fledged adult.
Carlina White was the name.
Oh.
Yeah.
When did
This
she
was
die?
1987. She was kidnapped from a hospital in Harlem, New York.
Wow. And she was raised down here?
Between North Carolina, then sometime in South Carolina, and then in Georgia.
Oh, wow.
So anyways, that's the if you know any information about that or you question anything, go on and look.
Yeah, because you'd be my age, buddy.
Yeah. So it's gonna be a male in his 30s.
31.
31. So we're gonna discuss the Corpsewood Manor. Gonna go ahead and give a trigger warning because there is sexual content discussed, I guess is the way to put it. So if you're listening with a child, you don't need to listen with a child. And if that's gonna bother you, just turn us off and go
Move
to the next
on.
episode. All right, so we are going to be discussing, like I said, the Corpsewood Manor. So, Dr. Charles Scudder, he was formerly a professor of pharmacology at English is hard. Nope.
Louisville?
Nope, I'm going to let you say it.
Loyola.
Loyola, there we go. I just could not get
Loyola.
I couldn't get the word out like you with Warwick this
Warwick.
morning.
Warwick.
University in Chicago, and the assistant director of the Institute for the Study of Mind, Drugs, and Behavior. So he had grown weary of the academic world and the bustling city life by 1976, and his desire for a more simplistic and indulgent lifestyle, coupled with a need for privacy, led him to make a drastic decision on his 50th birthday. With a modest inheritance providing a monthly stipend after his mother passed, he bid farewell to his previous life, selling off most of his belongings and embarking on a new chapter with his partner, Joey Odom. So he had previously been married to a woman and they had three kids. So he does have kids. But he apparently divorced his wife and then came out as being gay.
Okay.
And so he and Joey decided that they were gonna move. So the couple, along with their two massive mastiff dogs, mastiffs,
Yeah,
you
bull
know,
mastiffs.
yeah, they're huge.
Yeah.
So their names were Beelzebub and Arzanath. They gave them some unique names.
Isn't Beelzebub another name for the devil? I don't know about Arzanath.
Arzanath,
But is that like another name for the devil?
I think
Or just Beelzebub.
I think it is, or maybe some kind of like entity type thing, but that's this we're referring to the dog. That was the dog's name. We ain't
Yeah.
summoning no demons. That's the
No.
dog's name. But they ventured deep into the secluded woods of Georgia. There they set up camp on a large plot of land and began the task of clearing the area and constructing their dream home. Using 45,000 bricks in their own hands, they painstakingly built what Scudder affectionately dubbed their castle in the country. The entire process from clearing the land to completing the construction took approximately 2 years, during which they forged a new life far from the academic and urban environment which they left behind. So, if you look, like, I'll have the pictures up, but this place was actually looking at it from the outside, it was very, it was, pr I mean, to me, I think it was pretty. Like, and just seeing like the amount of love that they put into it, like you're gonna be like, holy shnikes.
And they did this themselves.
They built this themselves. Hold on. How do you get it to pull up?
Gutter. What a name.
Yeah, Scudder. I mean, it is kind of creepy looking, but I mean, could you imagine building that by yourself? Like
No.
with your own two hands? I wouldn't even know where to begin.
It does look wor it looks like a place where people do get murdered, though, so.
Well, people did get murdered.
Oh.
Okay, guys. So in 1981, Scudder penned an article for Mother Earth News where he eloquently described the one aspect of his urban existence that still brought him joy, the rats that frequented his garden pool. He likened his decision to leave the city behind and embrace a new lifestyle in the countryside as a magical metamorphosis. He referred to it as being compared it to shedding an old, worn-out skin and becoming new. So when Scudder and Odin finally arrived at their new property, they were met with a, an odd sight. There was a dead horse on their road. Yep. And so in a nod to this discovery, they christened the path leading to their manor as Dead Horse Road.
Wow.
So, yeah. The manor itself, adorned with stark bare trees, was aptly named Corpsewood. That's what they called it because the trees around it looked like they didn't have any leaves or anything. So within the walls of their castle-like abode, an intriguing and unconventional interior awaited. Human skulls, occult symbols, and artifacts adorned the space, creating an atmosphere that was both eerie and captivating to some. Alongside these peculiar decorations, one can find an assortment of,
Say
it says, gay-centric literature and painting,
it. Okay.
reflecting Scudder and Odin's, lifestyle. Tucked away in a small drawer was a stash of 12,000 doses of LSD that Scudder had acquired from his previous job.
Wow.
Yeah. And Scudder refrained from indulging in the drugs himself, believing that they had a tendency to make people divulge personal information. However, he would generously share them at parties that they would have on their property and may even have made some profit by selling them to some local bikers.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're a drug lord. Got it.
Yep. So they did add some more whimsical touches to their property. Taking inspiration from the Addams family, they had a sign that warned visitors to beware of the thing. Like thing, the hand. And at the entrance, a large pink gargoyle stood on guard, adding a touch of the fantastical to the already enchanting surrounding. Corpsewood Manor truly became a haven for them, where tree frogs and bats, they would see all these different things at their house. I mean, it was just in the woods, all these critters around. So Scudder and Odin were followers of Anton LaVey's traditional
Isn't he a
Satanist.
Satanist? Yeah.
Yes. He started the
Church of
actual
Satan.
Church of Satan. Yeah. So, it is crucial apparently to grasp that their belief system supposedly does not revolve around the literal existence of Satan or a devil as a supernatural being. Instead, they viewed Satan as a powerful symbol representing self-reliance, independence, and individuality. And that's what they basically had discussed was their reasoning for moving there. So that's what they believed that the Church of Satan is about. Now, whether I can say that, I don't know. I don't know really anything about it. I've never looked into it. This distinction was emphasized by Peter Gilmore, the high priest of the Church of Satan, who confirmed that Scudder was an official member of their organization. So it is 100% fact that they were members.
Wow.
So, contrary to popular misconception, these devil worshippers, as they called them, were surprisingly welcoming and hospitable. Ooh, this is where we're going to get into it, guys, okay? They opened their doors to strangers, inviting them into their home and offering them their homemade wine and it sounds like some LSD, guys. In fact, their generosity extended to sharing their beds with their guests as well. To accommodate their unique lifestyle, Scudder and Odin had constructed a separate structure adjacent to their main residence, aptly named the Chicken House. While the lower level indeed housed poultry, the middle floor served as storage space for canned food and their collection of adult materials, aka the pornography. The pornography, Sarah. It housed their pornography on the second floor.
This house is weird.
Wait for it. I think it's even better.
I'm living for the pink gargoyle, though. Huh? I want the pink gargoyle, though.
I'll just wait till you hear about what I got here that's pink that's getting ready to come up. However, it was the upper floor, known as the pink room, that had a more intriguing purpose.
Mm-mm.
This space was exclusively reserved for their unconventional gatherings, a.k.a. orgies.
And it's pink.
It's pink. Which involved ex-convicts, models, and here even teenagers, it says. Ugh.
Ew.
Scudder would correspond with these individuals, extending invitations to the property for sexually oriented parties. The pink room was equipped with comfortable mattresses, various BDSM implements, and an extensive collection of adult material, a.k.a.
Pornography.
As my little grandma would say, the pornography.
Oh, she had a little accent.
Yeah, she was country. She called it the pornography. Additionally, a guest book. Listen, my little grandma didn't believe in that. She's one of them little Southern Baptist ladies. You didn't do that. Additionally, a guest book was kept, serving as a record of their visitors' sexual preferences and featuring photographs as mementos of their encounters. So they're just up here taking photos. And you know they were Polaroids. Because think about it. This was the early 80s.
Yeah.
This was Polaroids because you ain't taking that nowhere and getting that developed. Could you imagine having to develop those those pictures, Sarah? Come on. No. The locals in the area occasionally found themselves drawn to the unconventional lifestyle of this, you know, couple residing at Corpsewood. One such individual was Kenneth Avery Brock, a 17-year-old delinquent.
That's illegal.
Right, delinquent. Now, keep in mind, this man moved here when he turned 50. It took him 2 years to build it, so he was at least 52.
Mm-mm.
A young delinquent who crossed paths with the pair while out hunting on their expansive property. So Brock accepted an invitation to join them in the infamous chicken house where Scudder's potent wine flowed freely. That's right. They were giving out the wine. So not only were they breaking laws by diddling a 17-year-old, they were getting him drunk and giving him LSD, too.
This is one big court case.
Right.
One big illegality. Illegality.
So, Scudder did engage in oral sex with the 17-year-old. An encounter that left the teenager feeling a mixture of embarrassment and kind of upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
But surprisingly, it did not deter him from returning for more visits and engaging in further sexual contact with the couple. In fact, he began bringing his troubled friend, 30-year-old Tony West, along with him to Corpsewood. West, known for his history of mental illness and such, was willing to overlook any discomfort he felt towards the couple in order to indulge in the free-spirited atmosphere, you know, a.k.a. the drugs and alcohol you're getting for free.
Mm-hmm.
That permeated from Corpsewood. So, however, West's perspective on the situation took a turn when Scudder attempted to engage in a similar sexual encounter with him after he had just had relations with Kenneth Brock. So, basically, he went from one trying to get with the other.
Mm-hmm.
And firmly standing by his beliefs and upbringing, West expressed his disapproval and promptly left. Which they feel like this reaction may have influenced Brock, who, after discussing the situation with his friend, began to feel that he was being taken advantage of. Which, as bad as it sounds, he kind of was. I mean, they're getting him drunk. He's 17. This man is obviously old enough to be your dad. He's got 3 grown kids. You know what I'm saying? Like, he knew what he was doing. That is like pedophile behavior.
Wasn't he a professor?
Yes.
Well, he was an educated dude. He knew. Right.
He knew what he was doing. So, anyways, not that I'm giving an excuse for what's about to happen, but I'm just saying. So, with his newfound perspective, that led both of them to hatch a plan to rob the seemingly wealthy and isolated men at Corpsewood. Unbeknownst to them, though, the couple's intention was to live a simple and minimalistic lifestyle, devoid of material wealth. So, I mean, they had no electricity and certainly no cash on hand, a fact that the would-be robbers had failed to consider. So on the fateful night of December 12th, 1982, Brock and West made the decision to execute their plan to rob the couple. With West's nephew, Joey Wells, and his friend, Teresa Hudgens, in tow, the group made their way to Corpsewood Manor. Upon arrival, they were greeted by Dr. Scudder, and together they ascended a 40-foot extension ladder to the third floor of the chicken house. Yeah, AKA Once inside, they indulged in homemade wine and. Sniffing a toot-a-loo is what that's called. It says it's a concoction of varnish, paint thinner, and other substances. So they were using other things to get them high as well. Despite Dr. Scudder abstaining from the huffing, he generously shared his wine with the group as they partied into the night. As the hours passed, Brock excused himself momentarily to retrieve a 22 caliber Remington Speedmaster from his car. Upon his return, he callously shot Odom 4 times before turning the weapon to the two mastiffs that were sleeping peacefully lying next to the stove.
The doggies.
Yep. Subsequently, Dr. Scudder was bound and threatened for money, leading to a failed attempt. So at this time, it says leading to a failed attempt of Wells and Hudgens to escape. So literally, the nephew and Joey Wells and his friend Teresa Hudgens were trying to get out of there. Once they realized they had shot these people, they were trying to get out of there, but they couldn't get this car to start to leave.
Oh my goodness.
Despite their efforts, the car failed to start, forcing them to go back into the house with the duo. So the duo proceeded to ransack the house and search for valuables, only to come up empty-handed. In a final act of brutality, West shot Dr. Scudder at point-blank range before the group hastily fled the scene. So following the heinous acts at Corpwood Manor, Brock and West made a desperate escape in Charles Scudder's black Jeep headed westward. Their journey took a sinister turn when they stopped at an I-20 rest stop near Vicksburg, Mississippi, where they callously murdered Navy Lieutenant Kirby Phelps during a car theft. The discovery of bullet holes at Corpsewood Manor by a concerned neighbor prompted a call to the sheriff, setting off a chain of events that would ultimately lead to Teresa Hudgens coming forward to authorities. Her harrowing account revealed that she had been held captive by Joey Wells before managing to escape and able to tell exactly what had happened. So literally, they held like Joey Wells basically kidnapped her and was keeping her in the house, and she finally was able to escape from his house. And then she went to the police as well. It's insane. Like it just went from whoop, 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 whoop. Like you said, it's a whole like
That's a whole thing.
a whole court case with
It
like
is.
20 different crimes all involved.
Oh my gosh.
So following a nationwide search, Teresa Hudgens and Joey Wells quickly like they cooperated with the police. And they were not charged with any crimes because they couldn't actually, they were trying to escape and get out of there themselves. But now Joey should have been held accountable for keeping her locked up. So Avery Brock, which is Kenneth, but he went by Avery, eventually returned to Georgia and surrendered himself on December 20th, 1982. West turned himself in on Christmas Eve in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Both men were sentenced to life in prison for their involvement in the crimes. Presently, Avery Brock is serving his sentence at Georgia State Prison, while Tony West is incarcerated at Augusta State Medical Prison. Despite multiple parole denials, they both remain behind bars to this day.
Wow. Good. I mean, they
So,
deserve to be there.
during the investigation, though, into the murders, authorities made some chilling discoveries at the crime scene. Among the findings were actual two human skulls, three vials. They did file three vials contain LSD-25. I don't know what that means. They did find the occult library with various occult tools, a substantial academic and literature collection, as well as a lot of homosexual pornography. So, which we knew that was there. But one particularly eerie aspect of the case was the self-portrait of Scudder found in the house. He had painted this portrait of himself, okay? Have you heard about this? So the story goes that Odom had had a vision or a dream that he shared with Scudder, which inspired the self-portrait of Scudder that was found in the house. So the painting depicted him with a gag in his mouth and five bullet holes in his forehead. A friend of the couple even claimed that Scudder had foretold his own death through the painting, telling her, "That's how I'm gonna die." And remember, he was shot in the head four times.
That's insane. Like
So,
the likelihood.
yeah. So,
This whole thing was like such a.
I told you, like, I gave a warning for a reason, guys.
It's creepy. It's disgusting.
Like, the whole thing is just like one big horror show. Like,
And literally, this was an educated individual
right.
that met up with another educated individual.
That's the painting. So, anyways, that's the story of Corpsewood Manor. The murderers of
That
Corpsewood Manor.
painting in itself is a horror.
It's a nightmare, isn't it? Like, come
That
on.
was crazy.
Like, that was a wild ride, and I was like,
So, what goes on in the building now?
nothing.
It
But
just ruins,
it's
like,
ruins
it's
at
just
this
there.
point.
Yeah.
It's ruins. Part of it, I think there was actually a fire there.
Well, I didn't know if somebody,
Yeah.
like, bought the area,
Nope.
restored it to something wholesome.
Nope. It's still a house of horrors.
We should go find it.
It's in Georgia. Let's go.
Yeah, go. Yeah. I'll go see it.
You would? You would go see it? We
I would
can.
go see it.
You just want to see that pink gargle.
Yeah, I bet you it's still there too.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Did you pull it up online and
The
see
pink
it?
gargoyle?
Yeah.
No, but I will.
Oh, it's cute. The pink gargoyle is cute, guys. I'm going to share a picture of it.
Corpsewood pink gargoyle.
So, anyways, that's the story of Corpsewood, guys. I know it was a shorter episode on my part, but just wait for Virginia. Virginia is a wild ride when we get to Virginia. I know, I told you he's cute, and apparently
He's
he's
like,
still hanging out up there.
yeah, I want to go see it. Go see it.
Well, Georgia's not that far.
It's really not. I was in Atlanta once.
Yeah, like I was in Atlanta once.
I was, and it was only like 2 hours away. It wasn't that far.
So. All right, guys. So we'll be coming back at you next week with Michigan.
Yeah, buckle your seats because,
Sarah's got a long one.
yeah,
Potentially two-parter.
Corpsewood Manor is only 4 hours away.
Okay, that's not
It's in
far.
Somerville, Georgia.
Somerville, Georgia. Listen, guys, if you're listening and you're like, oh, I'm not that far, check and make sure you're not going to be trespassing on somebody's property. As far as I know, it's still there and
It
it's
says
healthy
it's
at this
open
point.
24 hours.
Nuh-uh.
It says it's open
Okay, well,
24
maybe
hours.
it's not private
Open
property.
24 hours.
Okay, there you go. The Corpsewood Manor. Go visit it. If you've been there, let us know.
Yeah,
Oh.
wait, let's.
Don't forget, though, if you've ever, like, if you have any stories, please tell us. Like, if you've met a murderer, we still want to do that. We still, or I do, anyways. I'm assuming you do.
It is a historical landmark in Chattooga County, Georgia.
I don't know about historical. It's murderous. It's giving the murderous vibe.
I guess. Oh,
Murderers.
it comes up on Atlas Obscura.
Right,
Oh,
yeah.
it says it's permanently closed. Oh, it's
Corpse.
crumbling too.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah.
Which makes sense, but.
There's the old pictures. Isn't that cool? And I can see why they named it Corpse. Well, look at those trees. They're creepy in themselves. So, anyway.
But Atlas Obscura is like my favorite website
You
when I
should have seen
travel.
the look on my face when I was reading this story. I was like, oh, this is a good one. We gotta. This is the
Yeah, no,
one.
that was wild, but thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'm ready for lunch.
I'm ready for lunch too. We're gonna go eat, guys, and then we're gonna come back and record Michigan. So if you know that, like,
Michigan and Virginia.
you constantly listen to us, just know that.
We record 10 episodes a session.
Yeah, and we're going to get some
We're going to get Fuji.
foodies. We may not need to tell that.
Well, who cares? There's so many Fugees in the world.
True.
But anyway, I appreciate it. I hope you guys found that as interesting as I did.
Yeah,
Look up
def
the pink gargoyle. It's cute.
and lock your doors and don't give drugs and alcohol to teenagers, all right? This should
Or
be,
anyone.
or don't, like, don't have sexual contact with a 17-year-old either if you're freaking 52 years old. Come on.
Disgusting. Well, as always, there's probably something sinister right in your own backyard.
Bum bum bum.